Fight!
Welcome to New Game Plus. We are a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
And I'm Nolan.
And this is episode number 89, and today we are joined by the host of the Party of One podcast and a brand new friend of NGP, Jeff Stormer. Jeff, Woo! Would you please introduce yourself to our lovely viewers?
Absolutely. I'm Jeff Stormer. I host a number of podcasts. The one you mentioned, Party of One, is a role-playing game podcast where I play tabletop role-playing games such as, but not necessarily, Dungeons & Dragons, one-on-one. It specializes in two-player role-playing games. I also host a second show called All My Fantasy Children, in which my best friend and I take listener prompts every week, and we roll up a role-playing game character using a variety of old, weird role-playing games, and it's a lot of fun, and they're both very good. You can find them both on SoundCloud, Twitter, Facebook, wherever podcasts are sold.
Absolutely, that's
awesome. I was familiar with the first one, but hadn't known you'd done that second concept, and that seems absolutely brilliant. It sounds like a ton of fun.
Oh, it's a blast. It's a real blast. It's good.
You've got three new subscribers, and so we are excited to check out your show. Thanks for joining us on our show today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Jeff, at the start, we love to do this, and I just want to be a polite host and ask you before forcing it upon you, but we typically, when we bring our guests on, we like to do a series of rapid-fire questions. A lot of them are unrelated to one another. A lot of them are unrelated to gaming whatsoever, but just gives us a little bit of more information about who you are, what you're all about. If you feel uncomfortable with any of these questions, just let us know. I mean, they're not awkward or weird. But,
super personal time.
We're gonna get...
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's get real.
Huh? Awesome. Well, let's just begin. We're going to start off easy. So just pick one, all right? D8, D10, or D20?
I like a D10.
All right. D&D 5th edition, 4th edition, or 3.5?
4th edition.
What is the best superhero movie to come out in the last 10 years?
Last 10 years? That's 2007, so that's Iron Man and later, so that would be...
You know your stuff.
Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Nice. Ooh,
great movie.
Good one. Which doctor is your favorite doctor?
Oh, David Tennant, no question.
Nice. Who is your all-time favorite wrestler? Big question.
Oh, huh? Wait. I'm literally wearing an Ophidian the Cobra shirt right now. It's Ophidian the Cobra.
Okay.
WWE, it's Daniel Bryan.
What word describes your feeling concerning The Undertaker's retirement?
Roman?
Roman? Is that, okay, sure. Don't know, but yeah. What's your favorite wrestling move? One of your favorite wrestling moves?
This is very difficult. I'm a sucker for a tornado DDT. You can't, oh, yeah. I feel
Who's
like they're just, they're, it's a cool move. Or you know what? No, I lied. It is a Blue Thunder Bomb. The Blue Thunder Bomb is the coolest move.
Sounds like a fountain drink. Blue Thunder Bomb, nice.
I'd drink that.
Did you know that I went to school with Sting's niece?
I did not.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Do you play any instruments?
I learned the ukulele for about 6 months in college, but did not get very far with it. But could when I gave it up, play most of They Might Be Giants, Anna Ng on it. But that was about as far as I got.
Nice. What is your go-to karaoke song?
This is the hardest question that you've asked yet, because I have a lot of them.
not because
you can't think of one.
Born to Run.
Say it again.
Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run.
Yes. Are you a Lord of the Rings fan?
Yeah.
Do you feel sorry for Gollum?
I think he made some choices, but he certainly suffered a lot, and I think that, you know. But also, in the end, he chose greed over salvation. So I think it's a difficult question to answer.
Whew, it's deep. What television series are you really into right now?
Oh, Glow. Oh, my God. We're like 8 episodes in, and it rules.
Didn't that just come out?
Yeah, it just came out yesterday.
Nice.
And you're 8 episodes in.
We're at least 6. I think we're 6, somewhere between 6 and 8, but it rules. Nice. It is amazing, and it's real, real good.
What is your favorite video game genre?
I'm a big fighting game fan, actually.
Oh, yeah. Favorite video game console?
I really... probably the PlayStation 3 is the last one that I own, so that's probably the one that I'm going to go with.
What's your favorite Final Fantasy?
I've got a soft spot for 7 because it's the last one that I got really into.
Yeah. Oh,
great.
It's a great
answer.
Sounds
like a good one. All right, pick one. Street Fighter, Tekken, or Mortal Kombat?
Oh, Street Fighter, no question.
Hmm? All right, pick one. Street Fighter or Marvel vs. Capcom 2 New Age of Heroes?
Oh, Marvel vs. Capcom 2, no question.
Perfect. And I'm glad you said that because out of all the games, this is the game that you chose to be our retro game of the week. So, viewers, sit back, relax, and join us as we talk about the game Marvel vs. Capcom 2.
Overview.
Yes, it is a game that I love deeply. It one of my favorite games of all time. I don't know if it's my favorite game of all time, but it's definitely in the top 5 to 10.
I love that. It's one of our only
we've
fighting games.
One other fighting game before this, I think, but that's
Primal Rage.
Primal Rage, and Primal Rage was just.
All right, so it's a little bit of a step up from Primal Rage. Maybe. I don't want to say anything too definitively yet, but I think it's a slight step up.
Yeah, this is the first respectable fighting game we've played. So for our viewers who aren't familiar with this game at all, Nolan, will you tell us a little bit about Marvel vs. Capcom 2?
Sure. So Marvel vs. Capcom 2 New Age of Heroes was first released in 2000 in Japan on arcade. So this was a true arcade fighting game first. It was developed and published by Capcom, so that's Street Fighter, if you don't know. They also make Mega Man series and a bunch of other huge titles. And they continue to be a huge fighting game company still. So it's the fourth installment of the Capcom Versus franchise. So there's others beside this. Clearly, this is the second one, but there have been others besides just Marvel versus Capcom 1. While its original and true form was arcade, most of us in the States probably played a port of it, and it did get ported to Dreamcast, PS2, PS3, Xbox, Xbox 360, arcade, and believe it or not, iOS, so very accessible game to play. And the title sort of speaks for itself. It's a fighting game, clearly, where you choose from a roster of both Capcom characters and Marvel characters, Marvel superheroes from the comics, and you've got all the big names in there, Spider-Man, Cyclops, Wolverine, Hulk, and you still have Capcom's big names from Street Fighter like Ryu, Akuma, Kami, and Mega Man. So I'm sure we'll get to all the characters that we picked in a second. But the main quirk of this game, the main thing, is that you don't just pick one character to fight with, you pick three. And it's like a tag team. So it's a very unique mechanic in a fighting game.
Yeah, I really like the team building aspect of it. That's one of the things I really like about it that makes it different than a lot of the other fighting games. And I'll get a lot more into this as we go. But the team building aspect and the way that the team members interact is really one of the things that brings me back to Marvel vs. Capcom again and again.
Well, sure. I mean, that's got to be at least one of the main things, the primary things that sets it apart from other games. Street Fighter is a great game, right? But you're picking one character and you're fighting another character. Lots of fun, but it just puts in a whole new dynamic when you bring in a second party member. But when you bring in a third, it's like, it's just a totally different game altogether.
And that's the thing. Marvel vs. Capcom 2 added a third. Like the first one, you only pick two characters to tag team. And then they're like, you know what? Here's a third one.
So, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very unique. And for those that tell me that Smash Brothers is chaotic, they have never played this game.
Yeah, that's actually the other thing I really like about it, is that it's
nuts.
It's a controlled chaos, and I really, I love that.
I like that you said controlled chaos, because it really is. Like, it's not just, like, even, I know, I don't want to offend anybody, but Smash Brothers, to me, seems so chaotic when you get so many people in there, because so many things are happening all over. Everybody's all over the place. The stage and the environment is even...
And if you play with transitioning items.
At times, like, so much is happening, and it seems just chaotic. But yeah, in this game, it did seem like controlled chaos in the sense that it's still chaotic, a lot's going on, but it's somewhat manageable because, for the most part, you're only going to have 1v1 on the screen at one time. You can definitely bring in assists and partners, and you can do these huge moves with all three of your members, but you're really only controlling one at a time, so it's somewhat controlled.
And it's understanding, like, the game is so built around understanding when to get chaotic, as opposed to Smash Brothers, which I feel like is more... They're both chaotic, but I feel like Smash Brothers is more reactive in its chaos, if that makes sense. Like, you're more reacting, like, with items. It's like, oh, an item has popped up, now I have to adjust how I'm playing to deal with the item. Whereas right. this, it's like, okay, I have to decide when to sort of get chaotic and when to switch up characters and when to use my team-up moves. It is, it's more directive instead of reactive, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. One other thing worth pointting out about this game in general, the assist feature is super awesome, and adding the third player was great. Mm-hmm. And especially, you know, the addition of the third versus the second, but that wasn't novel yet. They'd done that already. What was novel about this game is this is the first game, if my understanding is correct, to do 2.5 graphics. In that the sprites are still all animated in 2D, like all previous fighting games to this time, but all of the backgrounds are actually rendered in 3D. And that was novel. I believe this was the first game to do it, and it makes it visually something very, very appealing and pretty in a way that a lot of games prior to this weren't.
Yeah, on paper... Oh, go ahead, Jeff.
I was going to say, the art direction in the game is just... It's mind-blowing. It's a beautiful-looking game.
On paper, what you just described, Kenny, to me sounds terrible, but like it works so well in this case because you've got these beautiful rendered backgrounds, and then like the fighting is very... It's like the center of attention. That's where your focus goes. So you're not like getting lost in these detailed backgrounds. They're just there and it works.
Fighting games actually went like full 3D, I actually felt like it was a negative. When you started to move around and even when your characters started to move on that Z axis a little bit instead of just back and forth, it kind of lost the spirit of fighting games for me. And maybe I'm just a purist and played too much Street Fighter as the one of very, very few fighting games I ever played as a kid. But I like the back and forth and looking pretty, and they added enough chaotic, you know, visuals with your moves and everything that it felt busy and pretty, but the addition of the moving backgrounds really just sort of stepped it up to the next level.
Jeff, before we move on into our gameplay section and talk about our experiences with the game this week, could you share like your connection to and your relationship with Marvel vs. Capcom 2? Because at the start we said you can pick any video game that's 15 years old or older that you want us to play, any console, any genre, and out of all of those, you selected this game. So we kind of really want to know why.
Absolutely. I've got a long history with this game. Goes back to the days of the Blockbuster era when I was in middle school, high school ish, because 2000, yeah, I would have been early teens. I went to not a Blockbuster but a Hollywood Video, which is where my family went on Friday nights. We would get a video game, 2 days later you bring it back. I have always loved superheroes. Like, I'm a superhero guy. Like, I've always been a fan of superheroes. And I've always gravitated towards fighting games like Street Fighter. It was one of the first games I've ever played. So, like, I gravitate towards those games. Even if I'm not very good at them, like, I gravitate towards them. So I saw Marvel vs. Capcom 2 on the shelf of the Hollywood Video and said, like, well, I want this. This is the game that I want. So we grabbed it, and I fell in love immediately. And it was a thing where... It was a gateway for me in a lot of ways because, like, what it is I love superheroes. So, like, it had a bunch of characters that I love Captain America. I'm a Captain America mark. I die for the guy. So, like, I saw that and I was like, oh, Captain America, that's so cool. Oh, it's got the X-Men, that's so cool. And then there's a bunch of other characters that I didn't know. Like, I was like, oh, there's the Street Fighter guys. Who is, like, but who's that? You know, It's got a big roster, which is a thing that, like, I've always gravitated towards, because I'm not necessarily good enough at fighting games where, like, I start to care about tiers and which characters not to play. Like, I'll play whomever. If you just give me 40 characters to play, I will play 40 characters.
Yeah.
And so, like, it was a real gateway for me in terms of, like, learning about different video games and learning about different superheroes. Because, like, I played a bunch of different games out of Marvel vs. Capcom. Like, it was a game that introduced me. I was like, oh, who's Morrigan? Let me learn about who Morrigan is. And so I played the Darkstalkers games, and I was like, these games rule. And it was a lot of stuff like that.
So it was really a gateway drug into all of the other harder drugs of video gaming.
Of gaming.
And then there's a particular thing I have to talk about because I think the people expect it. As I'm playing Marvel vs. Capcom, I'm looking through the characters and I'm like, who is this Ryu knockoff in a pink gi? What's his deal? And that is the moment that I fell in love with the greatest character ever put into a video game, Dan the Man Hibiki.
Okay. And he's your favorite character?
He stole my heart right off the bat.
Even more so than Captain America. I mean, if you could only pick one.
Yeah, I got to go Dan. I got to go Dan. Oh, wow. Dan fans unite. Because, like, nice. The thing is, like, you play him and he's bad. He's a bad character. Like, he's and then you learn about him and you learn that he's intentionally designed to be a bad character. And it's the greatest, like, it's my favorite thing in video games because Capcom said, oh, these guys ripped off our character. Let's rip off their character. We're going to make him the worst character in the game. And then we're going to accidentally make him really charming and fun with a compelling, rich backstory. And he's going to have a taunt where he writes an autograph and throws it at you. And then if you get hit with the autograph, it does damage. It's the greatest. I love it. I love Dan Hibiki. He's so great. He's the best character in Street Fighter. They stopped using him in Street Fighter games, and I'm like, why? No Dan, no sale. Like, why would I buy your games if you're not going to let me play Dan?
Done with Street Fighter. I don't
understand the point.
So your team, it sounds like, is always comprised of at least Dan and two others.
Depends on, like, what I'm playing for. Like, sure. If it's a grudge match, then maybe I leave Dan behind.
Yeah, just out of respect to the man. But Dan is definitely in your consideration of party members, and I think it would be great for us to actually, in our gameplay section, to begin talking about the teams that we selected.
Sure, absolutely.
Gameplay.
So I'll jump in because at first I totally failed on this front. And by failed, I just literally mean I picked characters I thought I was going to enjoy and that were going to be good. And then I was absolutely terrible with them and had to go rethink everything. And so I jumped in and for some reason, probably because of conversations we had prior in this week about fighting games, I was feeling like playing big, bulky, get-in-your-face characters. And so I pulled out Hulk. I pulled out Zangief and somebody else that I don't even remember that was just big. And I tried to just run up and punch everybody in the face and toss them around. And first time I played Hulk, I had a little bit of fun. He was kind of interesting, but I ended up doing terribly. Like, I couldn't even pass on easy mode, like, the first level. Now, I really am bad at fighting games, truly, truly. But I went back and rethought characters. And the only character that really stuck with me that I liked and took the time to actually learn a little bit, who was very, very strong, was Cable. And so I used him as sort of a core component and then played around with mixing in other characters around him to varying degrees of success.
Kenny, this is unusual. I think we had the same thought this time. I wanted to play those big characters too. So I went Hulk, Zangief, and Guile because I love Guile. And that was bad, but I still had fun. So that was my first team. And then I swapped out Hulk for Spider-Man to have some speed there.
You were saying this week you played a little bit of Mega Man as well.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of unlockable characters in the game, and Mega Man's not on the original roster, but yeah, I love Mega Man. He didn't feel the greatest to me, like, if we're talking tier-wise or, like, just how good he is, but I love Mega Man, so of course I put Mega Man in my rotation.
That's one of the fun things about these games is that you don't just have to pick who's top of the tier. If you're competing. But the thing is, when you come to this game and you don't have access to all of them right away, but there are 56 characters to choose from. That is an outrageously large roster.
Right?
Huge. Especially for, like, relative games that were coming out at the time. Like, rosters in fighting games today tend to start approaching that kind of number, but you know, only over time if they're, like, adding characters continually. To have that many characters right off the bat, even if some of them are unlockable and whatever else, was a massive pool to play from and adds to the vibe of this game of chaos and different things going on and different combinations of people you can put together, and big part of why this game was so popular, I think.
Yeah, so I did a first play this week. It's up on our YouTube channel, but and I don't recall the first group that I selected. I know I usually do a web slinger, so that's either Venom or Spidey, and then I had Captain America and my crew at the beginning. I know who I ended up really enjoying, and that's Rogue. She moves around quickly.
Rogue is a lot of fun.
She's able to do this thing where she flies towards you, kisses you, and drains some of your energy, which not a lot of the characters that I know of are able to do that, and then it gives her some, does that maybe fills her her meter to be able to use, I don't know, but she was able to move around quickly, do a lot of damage, and that was the kind of thing. So whereas you guys went for like some big bulk, I went for swift and quick.
Well, and one of the things that I love about, and this goes to one of the things I love about the sort of the team building aspect of the game is like having is, and this was something that was taught to me by my college roommate who with whom I played the game for hundreds of hours until he sold the game because it was going on eBay for $200. Jeremy, I've Ooh. Never forgiven you. Just as putting this out there, I've never forgiven you.
Come on, Jeremy.
But one of the things I really love about the game is like mixing and matching characters who are good at different things. So I think my team usually, only because I really love thematic consistency, is I would usually go with an Avengers team of Iron Man, Captain America, and the Hulk.
Nice.
Because Iron Man, he's got all like ranged blaster attacks, so it's good for like he's good for if the other person has a slow person, then if they go with like a more mobile type, you can swap out for the Hulk and get that big bruiser type like the tank. And then for middle characters, Captain America is very good. He's very mobile. He's a good middle character. He's sort of the Ryu of the Marvel side, him and Cyclops. So like they both kind of fit into that middle tier as a good balance character.
Yeah. I want us to stay on this for a second, the whole team building thing. Because first of all, we've said how many characters are in the game, but like that opens up like endless compositions, like team comps. So competitive players, you have to, I super respect Marvel versus Capcom 3 professional players because you have to learn the game.
Yeah.
Because the team comps and like the specials you can assist with, there's three different ones for each person.
Right.
So you have to know what to expect, what to not expect. Like the mind games are endless and nuts. So like, just the time commitment that this game would take to get like professional at is unreal.
If a lot of fighting games are summed up as a rock, paper, scissors kind of thing, where somebody picks something and you're having to pick something to counter them, this game's kind of like playing rock, paper, scissors versus an octopus.
Right.
Because like, you can't counter one thing. You've got to counter their team build. You've got to counter specific characters versus other characters, the ability to swap them out. You've got to counter which specials they're using, which assists they're using. It's super duper complex, and that just makes it, as a fighting game, have so much more depth than a lot of fighting games would.
Well, yeah, the rock, paper, scissors analogy, like, the octopus is exactly right, because every game is, I think, 6 to 9 different games of rock, paper, scissors, because every character's got 3 different things that they can do. So generally, it's something like you can do an anti-air attack to keep people from jumping, you can do a balance attack and some sort of support attack. And there's various things from there. There's blasters, there's ground types, there's all sorts of stuff. So there's 3 different things your characters can do. Then there's 3 characters. So there's 9 possibilities for every game. So every game, yeah, the mind games, it's like I have to predict 9 different variables and build a team to that.
Yeah. And then like once you're in there, hope your team's good enough and like consider spacing. Mm-hmm. Like fighting games are so complex, just on a normal fighting game, just 2v2 on a 2D fighter. So like, wow, it was such a unique thing for them to approach the genre for. And like, it's still a thing. I mean, they're still making games like this. There's other versus games like Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe is a game. So like, yeah, it just started something so unique.
Mm-hmm.
So at the beginning of the game, you come in and you've got this screen and there are like 8 different things that you can do from a save load function. And this depends on, you know, are you actually playing in the arcade or are you playing on some kind of system? On the version that I played, you've got a save load function. You've got a store where on this game, you had to unlock these secret characters and even some different costumes by gaining experience. So it's beating the game multiple times, it's doing different things in your trial mode, but then you can spend that as currency, and it's kind of like the start of microtransactions. I mean, but it's all just experience that you're doing, and then unlocking the characters that way. So unfortunately, I wasn't able to play a lot of the characters that I wanted to this week. Like, I wanted to play Magneto and Gambit and Iron Man and Akuma, who's one of my favorite Street Fighter characters of all times. But for the longest time, I couldn't figure out how to access them. And then when I figured out that I had to use all my experience, I could have. I know, Nolan, you were trying to hook me up with like a Game Shark code. And I know that on some versions, you can actually do a series of inputs. I think on the arcade version I played back in the day, like in the actual arcade, it was just a matter of doing the right thing with the directional, you know, the D-pad, the toggle, and that would unlock it, but not in the version that I played this week.
Yeah, I think a lot of the XP stuff, you mentioned microtransactions, I think the XP, like, unlocking aspect of it is something that came with the more recent, like, next-gen versions of the game, because I remember... With the PlayStation, most of the characters, like you mentioned Magneto and Gambit, all those characters are just available when you start the game, when I played the game.
So nice, yeah.
Yeah, all of those characters were just available. And then, like, Akuma and a few other of the unlockables, like, I think Shadow Charlie is a character, which is a weird character to put in, but whatever. I think some of those characters are, like you said, their input, you just do back, forward, back, etc., and, like, you eventually just land on that character's base.
One of the things that I really appreciated in this game... First of all, let me preface. I'm really bad at fighting games. And Kenny, you too?
I think if we had a competition for who was the worst at fighting games...
Yeah.
I think me trying my best with you trying to throw it, you would still win.
Okay, that's fair enough.
Like, but I'm terrible at fighting games.
I'm still not the best. But one of the things that made it... very helpful that I figured out about halfway through my experience is that, which is really cool, you can pause the game and you can go to an option within the pause screen that makes your move list visible, a visible overlay at the top of the screen. Now, I know for veteran players, that is probably the, you know, most annoying thing for anybody to do. But for me, a novice, someone who's just playing this game for the first time, it's really nice to have my move set at the top of the screen, and I can try that multiple times with multiple characters, and it was just a really nice thing to be able to see so that I could at least do something worth looking at.
And you weren't actually annoying anyone, Dustin. You were playing against the computer. I think you were just fine.
The computer was furious. I know I was getting some tweets from it, and I gotta say, it was real upset.
You're gonna regret that decision 20 years down the road when we're serving our digital overlords.
Well, but that's a really good point, and that's something that, like, you don't see in a ton of fighting games, and I wonder if that has something to do with Marvel vs. Capcom as a gateway type experience, because I know that, like, later Street Fighter games offer you that the move screen, but it's at a remove. Like, you can pause it and pull it up, but it won't display it on the screen.
Right.
Like, as you're playing.
Yeah, this is something a lot of fighting games have struggled with, in my experience, is the teaching you how to play. You know, they go to the training mode. I did miss, in this game, not having a, like, single-player mode to kind of play through some kind of story. I know you can, like, play through the arcade and have your team battle through and whatever else, but that's a sort of natural place to kind of learn the game and the world a little bit. But I guess since the universes are established and this really was trying to be a purist fighting game, it worked for me. But it was something that I was hoping to have and didn't have.
Yeah, well, I think even in other Marvel versus Capcom games that there is some kind of story. But in this one, you're really not playing much of a story. And I was kind of bummed when I got to the end of the game that I beat the boss and there was no kind of special ending. I remember that's always a kind of a fun reward at the end of a game, a fighting game, that you're able to see, like, that character's conclusion or some kind of unique ending. But really, from what I gathered, it's just no matter what team you take through, you fight the same boss and it's the exact same ending in each and every one.
I did feel like this game did a really good job, sort of back to the, you know, load screen help you learn your moves kind of overlay, being very accessible and friendly. You could pick it up and it was responsive and pretty easy to figure out kind of what your basic moves did. Yeah. But then with a much higher skill ceiling. A lot of fighting games go for that, like, that you have to master them from the very beginning to be any good, where it almost feels daunting to jump in and play them. But as a person who doesn't, A, like this genre much, and B, wasn't familiar with this specific title, I was able to jump in, load up the game, and feel like I could kind of figure out what I was doing on a pretty basic level right from the beginning. And that was nice. That's something I often struggle with this genre.
Jeff, you mentioned that you're not huge into like the whole tier list thing, but are you familiar with or aware of like what are some good go-to team combinations?
Yeah, like in general, I could tell you like maybe not the specific characters, but definitely the types of characters that go well together. Because like I know that like the Avengers team I mentioned is, at least in my experience playing against people roughly of my skill level, a good team. And so yeah. Like, It's rock, paper, scissors on two levels. It's like you want a character to sort of fill each of the three kind of niches, like a quick mobile character, a good balanced character, and then like a tank. And so like that's a good thing to go off of. And then there's the second level of the modes that you choose. If you a big part of the game, and this is something that they don't teach, and this is probably one of the biggest criticisms I have of the game, is that there's this second layer that they don't teach you. And it was something that, like, I had to have someone explain it to me, because, like, even playing the game a bunch, I never fully picked up on it, yeah. Was the way that characters' modes interact.
Like the type of assists? Yeah. Is that what you're referencing? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so... when you select a character, you've got those three different ones, and they're different for different characters.
Yeah.
And they use the Greek alphabet to kind of denote which one you're going
with. So which style you're going with, yeah.
And so someone you might be able to choose a healing style or a projectile style or air style, and yeah, it didn't explain that at all.
Yeah, that's something that I've always kind of been a little critical of, is that they don't... there's this second layer that doesn't really get explained. And so, like, there's another aspect of it of, like, if your team is... mostly smaller, quick people. Like, if you're playing Mega Man and Spider-Man, then a great third would probably be Samba de Amigo, which I think is Samba de Amigo. And yeah, the cactus. Because the cactus has a really great healing power, which will balance out the fact that those guys are going to take damage really quickly.
It's awesome.
So, like, I understand my level of fighting game skill is exactly enough where I understand that I'm bad at it. Like, I can see the ways that if I could, in the moment, execute them, I'd be like, okay, yeah, if I could do this, then I would really... like, I understand, like, there's the concept in fighting games of a punish, where, like, uh-huh. You block an attack, and then there's, like, a quarter second where you yeah. can, like, hit somebody where they won't be able to block. I understand that in theory. It's just literally right. When I'm playing, I'm like, oh, that would have been an opportunity. That would have been when I would have done that. And I missed it. It's gone now. And now you've beaten me, but I see it now. Yeah. I see when I should have done that.
If there was ever a genre that's like the sweaty palms genre, it's fighting games. Because yeah. just the pressure, and like if you're playing in front of other people, there's even more pressure. I just have so much respect for competitive Smash Brothers players. I follow the Melee scene, which is... beautiful game in its own regard, but I've just, it's such a technical thing, not only to know the game, but then to execute it, and then, but also to be random and have mind games.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
You gotta be skilled, you gotta be technically good at the game, technically knowledgeable, and then also have that sort of strategic mind yeah. games counterplay, even within the kind of moves that they're doing and your opponent's play style, and lots and lots and lots of depth to people who play this game at the highest level.
Aged. So we already mentioned the graphics, right? Like we talked about how these 2D sprites, in my opinion, still look crisp and clean today. Mm-hmm. What's really cool, and what they did that was so smart, is they didn't try to like change anything from the comics and the animated series that we were watching during the time. Like they just took that, used the same costumes, the same outfits, the same bright colors. They didn't try to like grunge it up at all, and then just put it there for us to control them in fighting characters. I thought it was a beautiful idea, and that's why it still holds very well today.
And something about the graphics that I think is really great is, and it goes to the 2.5D graphics, is I actually agree with you, Nolan, that, like, the idea of 2.5D graphics sounds like a nightmare. Like, it sounds like a bad thing. But the way that it, but it looks so crisp, it looks so beautiful, because I think what it is that they didn't, a lot of times when people do that, when game designers lean into 2.5D graphics, they try to do it in the extreme in both directions, where the sprites are super 2D, they are cartoony sprites, and then the background is like full CGI backgrounds, and it just ends up looking like trash.
Yeah.
Is I believe the respectful industry term is a trash fire. But the way that they do it is like, it doesn't, like, I didn't fully realize it was 2.5D until it was pointed out on this podcast, because like, they just look like lush and almost like watercolored and rendered, and it looks like it's art direction, really, really, as opposed pretty. To we had a toy, so let's play with it.
Right,
absolutely. They were very tasteful. I think they knew what they wanted to do in a fighting game. They hit that classic fighting game vibe well, still added something new and novel, but did a great job. It reminds me, we had a conversation just this week about fighting games, and it reminds me a little bit of the classic arcade game Children of the Atom that we talked about a little bit, that I thought was so good because of the graphics and because of how pure and pretty and clean it was, and this very much follows in that tradition.
Yep. I believe Children of the Atom is considered the first thing in like the Versus series, even though it's technically only X-Men characters. I believe it is like the first partnership between Marvel and Capcom. So I think
surprise me. It has the same vibe on a lot of fronts, just more polished and fleshed out in this game.
Yeah, and you have to pull that off, cuz the fighting game community is going to call you out on BS if you just try and throw flashy stuff in to be impressive graphically and it doesn't play like a fighting game, or the mechanics feel off and you can't combo and there's no fluidity. They'll call you out on that. And the fact that they were able to throw that in there as just like an added bonus, like just visually, but still have the mechanics there, to me, make the age in respect to the graphics just that much more impressive. Now, age of mechanics, we should talk about that, because fighting games have developed and aged themselves over the years, and they've improved on different things. But this one, if we're just talking like a 1v1 thing, and I play fighting games from time to time, so I'm not as inexperienced as Dustin and Kenny, but just from a one-on-one perspective, I still think it feels really fluid.
Mm-hmm. Like, I've played I play a good number of modern fighting games, and none of them, to Marvel vs. Capcom 2's credit, none of them quite feel the way that it feels. And I think that's a real credit to the game, is that, like, they fighting games, it's very hard to be different in fighting games, and I think they pull it off while not necessarily reinventing the form.
Yeah. We talk a lot about, like, tone of games, just, like, the feel you get playing them. And on that front, this one kind of nailed it. There were a few things I thought that didn't age well, though, in this game. When we first booted it up and started playing this game, and the loading screen came in, and it was loud and busy and obnoxious, and then you get into that theme song.
I want to take you for a ride. I want to take
you
for a ride.
You didn't like that.
I want to take you for a ride. I want to take you.
Over and over and over. This guy really wanted to take me for a ride.
That's your character select.
No.
I know. How long did you stare at it? It's not that bad.
You got to choose characters. Like, that takes a long time. You're figuring out who's an option and what you like about them. That song was way overdone.
I loved that song.
I'm all in on that song. This is a line in the sand deal. I am all in on Take You for a Ride.
Here's the deal.
You have that on repeat, right? Just in your car.
It hit musically like the era that the game was in, but to me, the loading screen and how just like busy, obnoxious, loud it was, and some of the music that went with it was a little over the top, and I wish they'd toned it down a little bit.
So it was a jazz kind of like soundtrack, right? Like, it was very it's not your typical, like, this is a pressing meeting of superheroes to battle.
Right.
Like, it's like really light and happy and jazzy the whole time. It's fun.
Yeah, I think it's great. And like, I get what you're saying, the screen's super busy, but I wasn't on that screen very long. Like, I don't know what you guys were doing.
I don't know. It didn't do much for me. That was probably my least favorite part of the game. That, and though it is a purist fighting game and it has enough depth that it ultimately didn't need it, when you first got into the game and realized pretty much you've got arcade mode, that there's not a story mode, that there's not a lot of other kind of bonus options, at least initially, I thought was a big turnoff for me. Once I learned how much replayability this game had and how much depth it had, I didn't mind that as much. But as a pick it up for the first time, play it, that stuck out as something that it would have been fun if they'd added a little bit more of those options.
From an inexperienced point of view, I would say, so when I play these games, I want to be able to do this super power move that makes me feel like I just did something incredible.
Sure.
And you get that in some of these newer games, and so I was looking for that in Marvel vs. Capcom 2, and I got it. Like, I achieved that. You were able to do something, and I was able to actually do it really easy with my button configuration, in which I could use all three of my characters at this simultaneously to do some epic, incredible move that would do like a up to a 60, you know, hit combo on my opponent. And it all the time, even though you don't have that kind of cinematic cutscene that some of these newer games have, you still have this incredible flair that is occurring on the screen that makes you feel like you just did something awesome.
You should have played some Cyclops. Because that stupid move he does where the entire screen is filled with his laser was the most annoying thing to play against. I could never figure out how to do it consistently because I hate these thumbs and they're fat. but every time I was Cyclops, and I used him a lot as a support character, I would play against Cyclops and he would just shoot the entire screen with that stupid broken move. And it looked awesome and I couldn't do it, so I got mad at him.
So there's two things. One, one of my favorite parts of the game, and this is the rock, paper, scissors team building part comes up again, is one of my favorite things in the game is when you can like tailor your three characters' things to just be the perfect hyper combo is the most satisfying experience in the world. Where like the Avengers, what it is Hulk jumps in the air and comes down with a chunk of a building and pins the guy to the ground that you're fighting. Then Captain America runs at him with the shield and like hits him because he's in position for that. Meanwhile, the whole screen is covered in missiles, so like there's nowhere that they can get away from it. It is the most satisfying experience.
when you're the one pulling it off.
Yes. Well, yeah. Well, and the you know, when you're not, like, there's a certain level of like, okay, respect.
Right.
And then the other thing about that I really love is this reminds me of another mechanical point that I'm a big fan of, is a lot of other team up multi-person fighting games, and I think it's even true of Marvel vs. Capcom 1, a lot of other team up fighting games, it is not easy to switch out. There's like a move you have to do to switch out. I know in Tekken Tag you have to like do a button config. I think in Marvel vs. Capcom 1 it's like a fireball motion type thing. Mm-hmm. But like in this, it's just one of your buttons subs out one of your people. And I think it's like your two shoulder buttons maybe like sub out your
so
two
nice.
People. But like it's just, it is easy to do, and it adds a layer of accessibility because it's like, oh, this is a core part of the game and I can do it without having to like figure out how it works.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Anytime we're in an age section, it's good to look at kind of like what the legacy that it left or the games that came after it. So from what I can tell, Jeff, Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite is set to release this September. Do you know anything about it and are you excited? Are you going to play it?
It looks like a really interesting game. I know the roster came out real recently and it felt like a little bit. So far, like, I don't know if they've announced all the names for it. I know that a roster came out and it might have just have been like the core pre-downloadable content names, but like the roster for it felt a little bit safe and it felt a little almost corporate. Like, there's no X-Men in it, and like, I'm not a huge X-Men guy, but like, I know that there's no X-Men in it because they're a Fox property and Marvel's trying to like limit all of the things that aren't X-Men, like aren't their Marvel Cinematic Universe people.
Right.
So like, that feels
kind
a little
obnoxious.
Like, it all feels a little safe and not innovative. And also, Dan Hibiki's not in it, so why would I
so
ever bother with your game?
Just out.
Well, the thing that scares me with that is the microtransactions
yeah,
and DLC. So nowadays, I'll use Street Fighter V, for example. They release characters and you can get them DLC. Now, the option to use in-game credits is still there, but it's more convenient, obviously, to buy a season pass and get all those characters. So I hope they don't abuse that. With the roster being as big as Marvel vs. Capcom is, I hope they don't abuse that and try and just get money from that.
I strongly agree.
Yeah, that's a bigger problem than just this game. That's really a game development where it's at and where people are willing to continue to vote with their wallets. Like, that ultimately is on consumers as a problem, but it is a major problem in game development.
I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt and just say they're not going to abuse that, but that's a concern. And as far as this game goes, that the legacy is still there. I mean, they lost Marvel rights for 10 years after this game. Capcom lost that partnership, the license to do Marvel characters. So they couldn't make a game. And then in 2011, they came back with a third Marvel vs. Capcom, and it's still played today in like the competitive scene. It's still a big deal.
Well, and the other part of that is that they lost the rights. It came back 10 years later, and in those 10 years, no one stopped asking about it. It wasn't a thing where they were like, well, they lost the rights, we're not going to see another Marvel. People, like, did not let up on Capcom until Capcom finally said, fine, let's go back to Marvel, because they were like, we need another version of this game.
And that's because this game was still being played. It was so popular and innovative, and the competitive scene continued to, you know, grow and develop and see innovation that it stayed popular. It was a big enough title to transcend that gap that could have killed the series but didn't.
The final shell shock.
So, do we give this game our vote for New Game Plus status? It all comes down to this, guys. And we'll start with our guest. Jeff, we want to give you the opportunity. Do you give this game your thumbs up, saying people should play it today in 2017 and they would probably enjoy this game for what it is? Or would you kind of withhold that? We probably have no idea what you're going to tell us right now, but we can take a guess.
I want to drag out the reveal a little bit because I could go in any direction. What's he going to choose? Yeah, I would give it the hardest possible thumbs up because it's...
Sure you would.
I think it's so... It's got such a low, like, barrier of entry, and I think there's something for you if you're a superhero fan, if you like fighting games, if you like Street Fighter, if you like some, like, the other Capcom games, like, if you're a Mega Man fan, or a Darkstalkers fan, or you're a fan of one of those weird games like Strider, or Steel Commandos? Steel something? Whatever the one with the robots is? If you're a fan of any of them, or superheroes, or you like a particular superhero, or you have the correct opinion and you love Dan Hibiki, any of these options are available. Like, there's something for you, and it's just such a big game that I think you're gonna love it.
Yeah, awesome, Kenny. You've got 30 seconds.
Okay, so here's the thing. I assumed I would always say no to pretty much any fighting game we played, because outside of maybe the early Street Fighter, I just am not a fan of the genre. I think it's a genre that either you like or you don't. And so giving this a universal thumbs up to everyone feels like a pretty high bar to me. You have to be a really, really, really great game. This pulled it off, however. Even not liking fighting games, I had fun playing this one. And so, again, I think it's the things that Jeff pointed out, that it's accessible, that you can jump straight into it, that there's complexity, that it's big and flashy and fun, and lots to learn, and characters that you love. And even though I was terrible at it, and don't think I will ever fix that, I still enjoyed my time with this game this week, which is definitely saying something. So, New Game Plus for me.
Nolan?
I'm very torn, because part of me, when you say it's accessible, I totally understand. But then the other part of me says, no, it's totally not. Because if you want to play a fighting game, don't add all those other layers of complexity to it to kind of confuse new players. But I think what wins it over for me is that you don't have to switch out. You don't. It's an option, and you probably should, and you probably should get used to it. But considering there's a dedicated button to it, and it doesn't take too long to figure it out, I think the actual fighting one-on-one mechanics are accessible enough and fluid enough that I would totally recommend it, because the roster is so fun And it's just a fun game. It's a great fighting game to experience if you're not into the genre. Because like Dustin said, it's most of the time it's like a dark, like Mortal Kombat, bloody, Primal Rage, peeing on animals.
Yeah, so many of those games have that vibe. And that's part of what turns me off to them. But this one is just like fun, superhero, clean, go in, beat each other up. And even though it's not like a super balanced game or anything else, it's super fun. And so it won me.
And then finally for me, Kenny, you mentioned at the start that the only other fighting game that we played as a part of this podcast is Primal Rage. So the bar was set pretty low,
really low.
Coming into this. And this game at first was super intimidating, but after I adjusted some settings and I looked through it a little bit, I had fun experimenting with some of the characters, learning their abilities, checking out every super move, and became pretty easy to do once I had up the move list that I could have in game. So there were a lot of smart decisions they made in this game, including but not limited to the graphic style, the character selection, how many there are, and it just made it a really accessible game. So whether or not you're huge into fighting games, this is definitely a very good entry into fighting games and one that is still very accessible today. So I think that's all across the board.
Unanimous.
4 or 8 thumbs up, just depending on how you look at it. And we do give this game our vote for New Game Plus status.
8 octopus tentacles up.
Yep.
We did receive some thoughts this week from our loyal viewers. Tom emailed us and he said, Marvel vs. Capcom 2 is a great choice. I poured dozens and dozens of quarters into this game at my local pool hall when I was a teen. That was at a time when 3D fighting games like Bushido Blade, Soul Edge, and Tekken 3 already made it to home consoles. Yet, the 2D aesthetic, simplicity, and familiarity of controls and strength of the crossover brands made Marvel vs. Capcom 2 an absolute joy to play. My team was always Spider-Man, Ryu, and Mega Man, and selecting the squad when revisiting this week brought back all the feels.
That's great. I love that.
Yeah.
Was he doing it at a pool hall while he was a teenager?
Yeah, that seems like a seedy place for a teen to be hanging out. I'm not sure about this guy.
We know how Tom turned out. We see why now.
Yeah.
But having those connections to certain characters and certain teams, absolutely, right? Like, I mean, you have that going into any fighting game or really any game. You're connecting with the character that you connected with when a child. But being able to come back to a squad that you created, like Jeff, for you, the Avengers team that you assembled, or whatever team, you know, Dan, you know, three Dans that you're
three
playing
Dans.
With. Like,
it's just, well, I don't know why I'd pick another character. It's just the
exactly.
right team.
Dustin, I'm really glad that you referred to that as assembling his team. That was thematically appropriate. Yeah,
I got that.
Well done.
I appreciated that. I saw what you did.
Got another message from Daniel. He said, here are 4 reasons why the Marvel vs. Capcom series sucks. Number 1, the gameplay is way too fast-paced and it is not well-balanced like the Street Fighter series. Number 2, there are no light, medium, and heavy attack buttons. What is this, Sonic Battle for the GBA? Number 3, the characters jump way too high in the air as if this was Virtua Fighter in the world of Marvel vs. Capcom. And number 4, 3v3 is way too much. Why can't the Marvel vs. Capcom series play like a 1v1 fighting game series?
Jeff, you want to tackle each one
no,
of those and tell them why?
Listen,
wrong?
If you're gonna have complaints, I think those are fair complaints to have.
Those
I think
some of them.
So yeah, especially the balance factor. Like if you are a serious fighting game person and you're wanting to avoid some of those tier list issues where you have to play the strongest characters, some of those quirkiness that I think we all found charming, where you've got characters that literally fly and just have, like, you know, things that are really abusable. I think if you're into the genre, I could see liking some of the other franchises better. But not being into the genre, I think it makes it more accessible, and some of the quirkiness and unbalance to me is really, really fun.
Yeah, I think those are valid points, but I think I also feel like those are valid points from somebody, like, deep, deep inside the fighting game community. Like, I feel like I can definitely see how somebody who is, like, really committed to, like, the competitive aspect could find those problems. I didn't even realize that there weren't light, medium, heavy attack options, so it's not something that I noticed, but I can see how I can see people finding issue with it as, like, a pure fighting game experience.
Sure. So, Daniel, we see where you're coming from. We disagree, and we had a lot of fun. But thanks for sending in your thoughts. And then finally, Antonin, our good friend, sent us a message and said, I enjoyed playing Marvel vs. Capcom 2. While definitely not the best game I've played, it worked as a decent button masher. I could not get any good combos together, but the game worked quite well without them. It was also really nice to see my favorite comic book characters come to life to fight. And you know, then there are those other guys. I recognize Mega Man, but that's about it. I think that the tag team mechanic was by far the coolest feature in the game. I haven't seen it before and actually found some strategy in calling my teammate to replace the current character by hitting the enemy with a two-footed kick. I cannot wait for the next game.
You know, that's a good point. He said that he was able to jump in and just start playing. That's kind of proof right there that a new fighting game player can pick it up and, you know, just hit buttons and you do something. You get something going.
Right, yeah, I think that kind of goes back to what we were saying. Like, it's maybe not the game for the hardened, like, veteran, but, like, it's definitely a great entry point, and it's a great, like, gateway to a lot of the concepts that will lead you to sort of the more advanced games.
Or if nothing else, you find one move that works, and then you just abuse it.
You just spam it
over and over.
Yeah, the one time I got almost through the whole series of, like, fights, it was playing Cable and spamming his, like, over-the-head gunshot that knocked him back, and you would just shoot him again and again and again, and if they got close to you, you'd call in an assist to help you out, and then you'd start shooting him in the face again.
Antonin, thank you for your email, and thank you for connecting us with Jeff. Antonin was the one that told us about your podcast, told us about you, and so I've been listening off and on for a while now, and it's great that Antonin had that connection, was able to connect us. So thank you for your email, Antonin, but also for connecting us with Jeff.
Yeah, thanks, Antonin. I like Antonin. He's great.
He's a good guy. Hey, Jeff, so at the end of each and every one of our episodes, we do something that we haven't been able to do for the last couple of episodes. So our viewers are really excited. Kenny is really excited.
I'm so pumped. It's been too long. Like, this is what we do. This is our bread and butter. And since we've had unique things and guests and everything else, we haven't gotten to do the randomizer in a while. And I want my fate in the hands of something that's not me.
All right.
So tell me, Dustin, what do we have?
So it's what we do is we randomize a game from our Retro Master list. It's this list that our viewers and us have been compiling since the genesis of this podcast. And it's games that are 15 years old or older, any console, any genre. And we throw them into a randomizer at the end of each episode. We randomly select a game that we're going to be playing for the next 7 days before we meet together to record our next episode. And so, Jeff, before we do this, we always like to ask our guest if there is a game that you loved or a game that you hated, a game that you think that we should definitely make sure is on the list. So whether or not it's already on the list doesn't matter. But if there is a game that you can think of outside of Marvel vs. Capcom 2, we already played that one, dude. Is there a game that you would suggest for us to add to the list?
Fallout 2.
Fallout 2.
I don't know if we have the second one on there.
No, I don't think it is.
We played the first one. Mm-hmm. On the podcast, early. which was interesting, but I don't know if the second one ever made the list, so we'll definitely put
sure
it on
there.
Great recommendation.
It's definitely going on the list, but for now, we are going to randomly select what our game is for the next 7 days, and it is... a game that was created by Tecmo in 1986, and it was originally released for arcades in Japan as a side-scrolling platform game, and it is called Rygar.
Rygar?
Rygar. Is that the first game that invents save games?
I don't know. We'll find out, though.
I feel like there's a first in Rygar. Or maybe it's that there's not, or I might be thinking of a different game.
Either way, this is the game that we're going to be playing. It came out in the arcades in 1986, but quickly made its way to the home console with the NES just the following year. So that's probably where we'll be playing it this week. I'm sure it's going to be very accessible. So find a copy of the game Rygar and play it along with us this week. We know nothing about it, probably.
I've never heard of it.
We don't. It'll be one of those explore the history of truly retro games kind of weeks. I definitely thought you said Trogdor at first, Dustin, and I was like, there's a game? We get to burninate the countryside? I was super pumped, but then, alas.
Nolan, you want to talk about our Discord?
I do. We have a Discord, and we talk in there about everything except for Kenny. We discuss games that we're playing. We discuss the game of the week. So we'll be talking about Rygar in Discord. So it's open to anyone who wants to join. So you can find that link, that invite link, on our social media. It's posted on our Twitter at the very top. And it's just a really lightweight program. You could even use the web browser version if you so choose. So get in our Discord and hang out.
Yeah, and we do have a channel in there called Past Games. So, Jeff, if you want to go in there and take over and just talk about Marvel versus Capcom 2 for the rest of your days, then
your
feel
life.
Free.
I mean, I'm just going to talk about Dan is really more accurately what it's
going to
be.
Okay.
We'll have a week of just lauding Dan.
Dan
just
memes.
Dan photos. It's just going to be me spamming Dan photos.
That's okay.
We would be really, really okay with that.
You can also find us on all of our social media sites, Facebook and Twitter at NGP Podcast. We've got a really central hub that's up and running now at ngppodcast.com. From there, you can find all of our links, so feel free to visit there. As always, you can listen to us directly on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Music, anywhere where a podcast provider of your choice. Feel free to find us there. Make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And then do visit us at patreon.com/NGP Podcast. We've always got additional content that is being released regularly, and especially this week. We had so many things that are coming out for different levels of our patrons, and we'd love to give you some additional content there on a weekly basis.
Absolutely. We got to especially thank our producers, Zion and Bradley, and we actually need to introduce a brand new producer who is supporting the game, our podcast, at the producer level. I'm going to butcher his name that he goes by. So, Dustin, will you introduce him? I'm going to call him the Big Gamboni or something if I try and do this from memory.
That might stick. His name is Gimberino.
Okay, that's almost as good. So, Gimberino is now one of our producers. Thanks. We've also had a couple of people who have upped their level of support. And so, big thanks to Dan and to all of you who support. What? Wasn't it Dan?
Dan. Dan supports us? Dan from Marvel vs. Capcom 2?
Yeah.
Dan, you got
it's
Dan.
That
Dan.
Yeah, that's why his support level went up.
You're done. Retired.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, you made it. All we needed was his cosign.
So thank you to all of you guys who are a part of this podcast, whether through listening or giving your financial support or just bugging us throughout the week. We love connecting with you guys. We've got a great, great community.
Yeah. And Jeff, this is your chance to tell everyone where they can find you, how they can check out all that you're doing. Take a moment and plug your stuff.
All right. So Party of One, you can find at soundcloud.com/Party of One Podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Party of One Pod. And we're also on Facebook, Patreon, all that stuff. All My Fantasy Children, you can find on SoundCloud at All My Fantasy Children. You can also follow that on Twitter at AMFC_podcast. Also Twitter, Discord, whatever else you're fancy. And you can find my non-podcast Twitter at Dex Dynamo. That's where I post wrestling and trash tweets. If you like some good trash Twitter, it's primo.
To be fair, I think most Twitter is trash, so.
It just means you're doing Twitter right. Absolutely.
Hey, Jeff, we've had an incredible time talking with you today about your beloved game. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Oh, this was a blast. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. We'd love to invite you back someday. Join us next week as we play Rygar. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
And I'm Nolan.
And this has been Jeff Stormer and a special episode of New Game Plus.